This is Murder in the Black with Steph and MD.
Welcome back to Murder in the Black. It's your host, MD. And today, we will cover a case that emphasizes the power of greed. We will call this case, The Love of Money. So grab your coffee if it's the morning, lemonade if it's the afternoon, and your wine if it's the evening. But either way, let's get into it. Now, if you watch the OWN network, in the beginnings of its conception, you are likely familiar with the show Welcome to Sweetie Pies. It was a reality TV show that spotlighted Robbie Montgomery and her Sweetie Pies restaurant. Now, Sweetie Pies was located in St. Louis, Missouri. It eventually got several different franchises across the country, but it was headquartered and created and started in St. Louis. The show was wildly popular at the time, and it had a 9-season run. The restaurant featured soul food, but the heart of the restaurant was its owner, Robbie Montgomery. She rose to fame initially as a background singer, also known as the Ikettes, for Ike and Tina Turner. And once she completed her time there, she opened Sweetie Pies, and it was successful. But once the Oprah Winfrey Network piloted the reality show in 2011, it featured the behind the scenes of running this successful soul food business, and it catapulted her success to like new heights. Shortly after the show started, Miss Robbie, as she was affectionately known on the show, her grandson moved from Lubbock, Texas, shout out to Texas, to St. Louis to live with her and just, you know, help her with the business and give him some opportunities that he otherwise wouldn't have been afforded in Lubbock. Andre was his name, and he became a series regular on the show, and it highlighted his transition from Texas to St. Louis. Andre had a big personality. He was a teenager trying to find his place in the world. He loved music. And this made a lot of sense when you know Miss Robbie's history with music. Andre was described as goofy, loved to make people laugh. He was a natural giver, and he would give people his last if they asked. He went on to graduate high school in 2013 while he was living with his grandmother and working the family business. Now, after he graduated, he began to focus more on his music career. He really wanted to be a rap artist. In June 2015, Miss Robbie, she went on vacation, and she set her alarm to her home as usual. But when she came back from her vacation, her home was in complete disarray. She had been burglarized, and she reported a loss of about $220,000 worth of cash, jewelry, and other items that were stolen from her house. Now, the police investigated this burglary, and during this investigation, they asked Miss Robbie, like, who has the code to your home? Because they learned that, in fact, the alarm was not triggered, but Miss Robbie was confident that she did, in fact, set the alarm before she left. And she told the detectives that only a few people had this code. One of those people was Andre, her grandson. But when the investigators went to go look for Andre, he was nowhere to be found. In fact, he had left St. Louis. Now, Miss Robbie, she called her daughter, Michelle, which is Andre's mom, and she asked her to see if Andre could have been the one to have stolen from her. She didn't want to believe that, but she was just trying to figure it all out. Like, the timing was real suspicious. Like, he left. He wasn't living there anymore in St. Louis. And so Michelle did just that. She asked Andre, but he was adamant that he did not have anything to do with this burglary. He told his family and, you know, friends who asked him that he would never do this to his grandmother. He loved her. He respected her too much for all that she had done and afforded him over the years. So around March 11th, 2016, Andre flew back to St. Louis, Missouri, because remember, he was no longer living there. And he went straight to the police himself to clear himself as a suspect. He took a polygraph test and he passed it. And he stayed and he answered all the questions that the police had. He was so cooperative. And the police, by the end of all of this, ruled him out and cleared him as a suspect in the burglary. But just a few days after they cleared him, Andre Montgomery would be found deceased. On March 14th, 2016, at 8 p.m., gunfire rang through the night, and 911 was called, and they were notified that shots had been fired. The witness stated on the call that they didn't see the shooter, but they knew that their friend Andre Montgomery had been shot. When the police arrived to find Andre with multiple gunshot wounds to his torso, they pronounced him dead at the scene. He was just 21 years old. The police began their investigation and tried to determine what happened and why someone would want to kill this local celebrity. They immediately ruled out that this was a robbery gone wrong. Why? Because his wallet was found on him and his jewelry was still on his person. However, Andre's cell phone would be intricate in solving this case, and the detectives knew that from the very beginning. So as they pieced together the events of the night, they learned that Andre was at the recording studio, and he even had video footage from that night in his phone where he was with his friends in the studio. He recently came to visit St. Louis, but not a lot of people knew that he was even in town. The police learned that prior to the shooting, Andre was on the phone with a friend who he was giving directions to in order to come to the studio. While giving him directions, Andre walked outside the studio, leaving his friends and everyone he was with inside. Shortly after he was outside, he was shot. But cell phone data showed that he was on his phone around the time of the shooting. So they contact this friend to see if he possibly was the one that lured him outside to ambush him. But when they spoke to him, he stated that he was on the phone with him getting directions. And while he was getting directions, he heard gunshots and then the phone hung up. They corroborated this friend's testimony because cell phone data did show that he was miles away at the time that Andre was shot. There was no possible way that he could have committed this crime. Additionally, he appeared extremely credible, very broken up behind this shooting, and they were able to rule him out that he was connected in any way to this murder. So the police continued to go through the one piece of evidence that they have, the phone. And they see that at 7:58 p.m., Andre took a call from a number. Now, this was prior to that 8 o'clock call that he took with the friend that they just ruled out. This number was later found to be from a woman who he had been talking to through text message most of that day. She was logged in Andre's phone as Alexis the Great, like literally Alexis the D-A Great. So that was obviously not her real name. So police had to track her social media accounts and they identified her as Terica Ellis. Now she was living in Memphis, Tennessee at the time, but she would travel to St. Louis to dance in strip clubs. She was an exotic dancer, and so she primarily did her work in St. Louis. The text messages between Andre and Terica showed that they were trying to meet up the entire day. And finally, at 7:07 p.m., she asked Andre for his address so that she could come meet him. And at this point, Andre provides her with his address. 1 hour later, Andre would be found murdered. So the police, they feel like this is a woman that they need to talk to. But the police were unable to locate her because she had left St. Louis. She was no longer there. At this point, the case begins to kind of stall. And the police are really fighting to like prevent this case from stalling. And right at this time, they get a call from the hotel that Andre was staying in while he was in St. Louis, and they tell the police that someone went into Andre's room right after the murder, and stole his personal items. So the police head that way because they knew that a few people even knew that Andre was in town. So they thought this might all be linked. When they finally find the guy that took Andre's personal items, it turned out to be one of his really close friends. And he told the police that he wanted to get Andre's belongings for the family so that the family didn't have to do that in light of all the difficulty that they were facing as a result of Andre's murder. And he had already turned all that over to the family. The police corroborate his story and they're back at square one. During the police's investigation, they also reviewed the security footage outside of the studio in hopes that maybe CCTV captured something that would show what happened to Andre that night, who was the killer. And what they see on the security footage is this dark figure walking toward the murders. And then moments later, that same figure is running away from the crime scene. But the security footage does not depict the age, gender, or the race of this figure. It's just not clear. It's not the best quality. So, with no other witnesses, the question that continued to plague the police was, who had a reason to want Andre dead? The police continue to track Terica Ellis because they feel like this is really someone that could give them some more insight into what happened, to provide a clearer timeline of the night or the day that led to Andre's murder. So at this point, they brought in a criminal forensic person and an FBI agent to help aid in the effort to go through Andre's phone because they really believed that the answers to this murder would be found in his phone, specifically as it related to the last people that Andre talked to. And when they looked at Terica Hall's phone, they uncovered that it was a prepaid phone. So they looked at the number that, they're looking at Terica's number and they traced Terica's number to determine that it was a prepaid phone. And the FBI began to sift through Terica's phone records. And they identified three numbers from this prepaid phone that she communicated with on the day of the murder. Now they were able to identify one of those numbers. It was Andre. And so they were left trying to figure out these other two numbers. And one of those numbers was identified as a prepaid number. So this FBI agent began to think outside of the box. They analyzed that prepaid number and decided to cross-reference that prepaid number with jail phone call logs. They didn't know if they were going to find anything, but they were just kind of just stabbing in the dark and hoping that they could hit something. And this was a tactic that the police would sometimes use to identify numbers. So they thought that maybe this could be what blows this case wide open. And they find that this prepaid number, in fact, matched a few calls to the jail records. They were able to pull those recordings for those calls, and what they heard on those recordings blew this case wide open. So while they were listening to those calls, they learned that the prepaid phone number belonged to a Terrell Hall. And he was known as a gang member in St. Louis. He was talking to his brother, who was incarcerated at the jail. And 3 days after the murder, the brother says to Terrell, "I heard a MF-er finally got him." So based on the timing and the connection to Terica Ellis, they believed that Terrell Hill was likely involved in the murder of Andre Montgomery. So the police needed to figure out this connection between Terrell, Terica, and Andre. And they did their investigative work and learned from co-workers at Sweetie Pie's that Terrell and other people in his gang would frequent the store. And during that time, Terrell got really close with a Tim Norman. Now, Tim Norman was Miss Robbie's son, who was also Andre's uncle. So then they uncovered that Tim Norman also had a relationship with Terica Ellis. And this sexual relationship that they had was illegal because he would pay her money in exchange for sex. And remember that third number that they were trying to identify? Remember, Terica had three numbers that she called on the day of the murder. One was to Andre. They identified the second one was Terrell. And they learned that the third number was Tim Norman. So through identifying the possible link to Terica and Terrell, they decided to do some more digging into Tim Norman. Now, although Tim didn't live in St. Louis, he lived in L.A. because he ran one of the Sweetie Pie's franchises out there. He was in St. Louis on the day of the murder. And in fact, he had flew into St. Louis the morning of the murder. So they began to look at Tim's phone and they revealed that 8 days prior to the murder, a worker at Sweetie Pie's sent him a picture of Andre in the restaurant. There was no additional text, no words or anything, just this picture of Andre. So they're continuing to build their case and they track cell phone data of the prepaid phones and Tim Norman's phone. And it revealed that those phones were in the same vicinity the day of the murder. Like several times throughout the day, right? Like not just one specific time, but it was almost like wherever Tim's phone went, these prepaid phones would also go. They further learned that after Andre gave Terica his location, she called Norman, and then less than an hour later, Andre was shot and killed. Now, 4 minutes after the murder, Tim Norman contacted a friend named DJ to come pick up this large wad of cash. Now, DJ found this to be so suspicious and weird that he took a picture of the money, like just almost like a way to corroborate that he did get this money, that he did receive money from Norman. And then after he got this money from Norman, then Tim Norman ended up texting DJ and told him to take the money to Terrell. Now, this was the nail in the coffin. The police felt like they knew exactly what happened at this point, but they wanted to just understand the motive. Why would Andre's uncle want to murder his nephew? So the police followed the money. They knew that if they followed the money, they could probably find the motive. And they learned that Tim Norman fraudulently took out a life insurance policy on Andre for $450,000 in 2014. Now, he did this fraudulently because he signed Andre's name. And he worked with an insurance agent who police later discovered was aware that he was illegally trying to get this insurance policy approved. Armed with this evidence and motive, The police arrest all three suspects in August of 2020 for their roles in the murder for hire plot. Terica Ellis accepted a plea in exchange for her testimony. And her testimony was that Tim offered her $10,000 to track Andre down. She claims that she didn't know he was targeting him for murder. She told Andre she would bring him some pants earlier that day because he requested them, that she pick them up. And she met Andre outside of the recording studio and she notified Tim that she knew where he was. And as she was leaving, she heard the gunshots. She then called Norman and he told her to leave town, which she did. As a result of her role in the murder and as a part of her plea agreement, she received 3 years, a 3-year sentence. Now, Travell Hill also testified against Norman in exchange for a 32-year sentence. He testified that the night of the murder, he met up with Tim Norman and he understood that he was to kill Andre in exchange for a fee. He obtained a gun and waited to get Andre's address from Terica. He then killed Andre, disposed of the weapon, and received $5,000 in payment for his role. Now, the insurance agent, Wally Yagman, pleaded guilty to a charge of wire and mail fraud conspiracy, and he admitted to fraudulently helping Tim Norman obtain the life insurance policy. He also received 3 years. Tim Norman, on the other hand, he has maintained his innocence even to this day. Tim did testify in his trial, and here's some notable things that I learned that he mentioned during his testimony. He stated that he didn't need the money because prosecutors kept trying to paint him as a person that was desperately trying to get money. He talked about all the cars that he had and that he was doing well. But the prosecutors revealed during the trial that Tim just a week prior to the murder was received an eviction notice for his home. So I don't know. You take it for what it's worth. Was he doing well? Was he not? Did he do it for money? Did he not? The other notable thing is that he took out the life insurance. He says that he took out the life insurance policy on Andre because he wanted to give his longtime friend, Wally, some business. Like, he was like, oh, you know, he's going into this new, you know, job and I just want to help him out. I'm going to take, you know, this insurance policy out on him. You know, he didn't testify to this at trial, but I did read in an article that his attorney stated that he took this insurance policy out on Andre because Andre was pursuing this career as a rapper and he just wanted to have a safeguard in case something did happen to him. I don't know. That sounds really silly. So I'll let you think what you may think about that. He also admitted on the stand that he did hire a private investigator to find Andre because of the burglary, but that he had no, like the burglary to his mom's house, but he had no intentions of harming his nephew. But prosecutors presented evidence that Andre texted his grandmother, Ms. Robbie, that he was fearful of his uncle, which is why he left St. Louis. The text actually read, and I quote, "Tim is after me," or something. "I'm not just about to be sitting in St. Louis when I know Tim got people looking for me." I would say that Andre knew that something was off and that his uncle was to be feared, right? Tim also admitted that he flew to St. Louis that day, but he denied that it was in any way related to the murder. In fact, it was routine, according to him, for the work that he did with Sweetie Pies. He also admitted that he paid Terica Ellis $1,000 for sex. He paid her $2,000 to open up a boutique. And he admitted that he asked her to help him find Andre, but he denied ever paying her to find him. And finally, he said that he connected Terica and Travail. He, introduced them and asked them to help him locate his nephew in order to get all the money, items, and stolen things from his mom's burglary, but that he never paid Travail to kill Andre. And he didn't know that he did that Travail killed him until years later. What do you think about that? That's the survey question for this week. Do you believe any of the things that Tim testified to at trial? In the end, Norman was convicted of murder to hire and conspiracy to commit wire fraud. He was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. Takeaways. The U.S. District Attorney for this case said, and I quote, "And the measure of someone's character is what they do when they think no one is watching." Tim was one person in public and someone completely different behind closed doors. And I think personally that is indicative of what happened in this case. Who Tim really was when the cameras weren't showing, when the fame didn't have a spotlight on him, was a completely different person. And that person was evil enough to conspire to kill his nephew. And whether that was for revenge because he believed that he stole from his mother, or if it was for the $450,000 on the life insurance policy that he took out fraudulently for his nephew, it's unclear. But what is clear is that he was not who he presented to the world. Now, I did learn that Tim had a juvenile conviction when he was younger, and that he experienced some major losses in his life. Both his father and his brother were murdered when he was younger, and he also experienced homelessness. But it appeared that throughout all of that, he had turned his life around, and when he got out of juvenile, and that he became this different person. And that's really kind of what a lot of people, or I won't say a lot of people, but the people that wrote on his behalf to the judge to ask for a more lenient sentence indicated in their letters of support. And is that, he really was this really upstanding guy, and they couldn't even imagine that this guy, this Tim, who they knew and loved, would do something so heinous. But ultimately, exactly as the prosecutor stated in this case, the U.S. district attorney, is that a person is who they really are when nobody is watching. And I believe that that is true for all of us. I believe that who we really are is the person that we present when we don't think other people are looking at us. And that is the definition of integrity, right? What do you do when nobody's watching? How do you act? How do you respond? And Tim had no integrity. He was so hungry and greedy for money. The fame that Welcome to Sweetie Pies afforded him, because he was also a series regular on the show, just drove him to extreme measures. And it was uncovered in the trial that he just spent that money like crazy. He was not good with his money, and he blew through it, and he just lived his life very reckless. And when it all hit the fan, right? Like when the walls came crumbling down and things weren't looking up, he resorted to some really extreme measures because the love of money is the root of all evil. And it's not money that's the root of all evil. It's the love of money. So my takeaway is that you never really know, right, who a person is, because who a person really is the person that they are behind closed doors. We all hope that that person is the same person that they present, but you never really know, do you? At the end of the day, Andre tragically lost his life. It was cut short way too soon. And for what seems to be such a selfish and ridiculous way, Miss Robbie, who had already experienced some extreme loss in her life, she had already lost her son, and she lost her husband to murder, now also lost her son and her grandson. And it was so avoidable. So avoidable. That's the case for the week, and I hope you enjoyed it. Look forward to hearing your responses, and we will see you next time on another episode on Murder in the Black. Bye.